Live from the heartland and the crossroads of America, it's Tony Katz today.
Well, I am just blown away. Hi, everybody. I'm Andrew Langerman for Tony Katz Today. On Tony Katz Today, you do a bunch of show prep, get a bunch of guest book, and then the U.S. Supreme Court throws a wrench in the works. Anyway, we got a great show today. You're going to want to stay tuned for it. We got Elaine Parker from the Job Creators Network joining us, C.C. O'Leary from the Southeastern Legal Foundation, Pedro Orta, former CIA case officer, John Berlau from the Competitive Enterprise Institute, and a gentleman named Aidan Bazzetti, all joining us on a jam-packed show today. Yeah, I was going to start off by talking about this bizarre National Guard ad that I saw right before we watched Dune Part 2 on Saturday. All set, pulled it. I'll probably talk about it later on. And then the Supreme Court comes out with this decision in U.S. v. Anderson or Trump v. Anderson, whatever they're calling it, the Colorado ballot access case. I'm sure if you were just listening to the news, you heard it. Let me read this. For the reasons given, responsibility for enforcing Section 3, that's of the 14th Amendment, against federal office holders and candidates rests with Congress and not the states. The judgment of the Colorado Supreme Court therefore cannot stand. All 9 members of the court agree with that result. Our colleagues writing separately further agree with many of the reasons this opinion provides for reaching it. See the joint opinion of Sotomayor, Kagan, and Jackson. See also the opinion of Barrett. So far as we can tell, they only object to our taking into account the distinctive way Section 3 works and the fact that Section 5 vests in Congress the power to enforce it. These are not the only reasons the states lack power to enforce this particular constitutional provision with respect to federal offices, but they are important ones. And it is the combination of all of the reasons set forth in this opinion, not as some of our colleagues would have it, just one particular rationale that resolves this case. In our view, each of these reasons is necessary to provide a complete explanation for the judgment the court unanimously reaches. The judgment of the Colorado Supreme Court is reversed. The mandate shall issue forthwith. Wow. I mean, we had thought that it might be. In conversations we had on the air last week, we thought that there might be a unanimity. But at the very least, we thought it might be 7-2 or 8-1. As Tony himself, Tony Katz, who, by the way, is in Israel, who we may be hearing from, kind of hoping we're going to hear from later on. We shall see. Tony himself said, when you've lost Sotomayor, then you know it's game over here. This is big stuff. And so, yeah, so with that in mind, so let's sort of go around, because I got audio that I was originally going to play talking about the conspiracy. What does this mean? Well, obviously, it means that Trump stays on the Supreme Court. And obviously, part of the spin that is out there is that this further demonstrates how delegitimate the Supreme Court is, right? That's part of the left's narrative, and we've heard this before. Of course, it's very much harder for them to make this illegitimacy of the Supreme Court argument stick when this was a unanimous decision, which is why Justice Roberts wanted it to be a unanimous decision. Also, the other talking point is, well, they didn't declare that Donald Trump wasn't an insurrectionist. Well, that wasn't for them to decide. That's not for them to decide. And so that is what they call the proverbial red herring. The issue is whether or not the Colorado Supreme Court had the power to do this. They do not. Therefore, it means these other state Supreme Courts don't have that power either. So here, let's don't just take it from me. I want you to hear from Jonathan Turley. Now, let me explain a little bit for the uninitiated. Jonathan Turley is a professor of law at George Washington University. He is very much of a straight shooter. Now, he gets knocked by the left for going on Fox, and so they claim that he's a conservative. No. Jonathan Turley is a constitutional scholar, and he looks at things on a very rational basis. As it happens, he takes issue very much when the left goes off the reservation on these kinds of things. I've respected Jonathan Turley for many, many years. Jonathan Turley is the man who taught me. He didn't teach me. I didn't go to law school. But I learned from him in reading his writings and listening to him speak about the dangers of executive branch authority or expansive executive branch authority. Here's what Jonathan Turley had to say on Fox this morning.
Let's move to our team now. Jonathan Turley, you are first up to react to this now, sir. How do you hear it?
Well, I've just been reading the opinion. It's obviously a sweeping. There aren't any real dissents, so it does look like it is unanimous, at least on the result. What they have a disagreement on is whether the court had to go as far as it did. Now, the most practical result of this is that the voters will be able to vote for the candidate that they prefer. This was a critical moment for this court in history. After all of the years we have spent in this republic, we came to a point where these states claimed that they could unilaterally bar the leading presidential candidate from ballots to prevent people from voting for Donald Trump. The court here spoke with a strong, and it appears unanimous voice, at least on the result, that that's not going to happen, that voters will vote. They'll make their own verdict, regardless of what happens in cases involving President Trump. They will cast the most important verdict of all. They will vote for the next president of the United States.
That's exactly it. I mean, he said everything correctly there. Listen, the Supreme Court, as a rule, especially in the last 30 years, does not like to interpose itself and its beliefs and its values in areas where the public expresses its will or where the legislative branch expresses its will. Right? And even, listen, even on the issue of the executive branch expressing its will, right? That's of course, how we got this Chevron deference case that we're going to be dealing with now sometime this term. And I still have great hopes for that. The Supreme Court rules on the law and the Constitution and how the two of those things interact. What does the Constitution say in terms of who has the power to remove a candidate for president from the presidential ballot? Well, it's Congress, as they say. And beyond that, they don't want to circumvent the will of the people or the ability of the people to express themselves in terms of a ballot. By the way, now we're going to, after the break, we're going to talk about, we're going to hear the reaction from folks on the other side and how the left is already working and has been working to legitimize, to delegitimize the Supreme Court. I want to talk a minute about this idea of the president being above the law. Because I had a conversation about this with my colleague, Jerry Rogers, the co-host of Andrew and Jerry Save the World, and the editor of Real Clear Policy. No. This and the immunity issue do not dictate that the president is above the law. The president has to operate within the confines of the law. It just as it happens, because the president has extraordinary powers as president of the United States, that there is a different procedure that is made available for holding a president accountable if someone believes that the law is broken. So it's not that Donald Trump or any president of the United States could imprison their opponents willy-nilly or could shoot and murder somebody, commit murder. Murder tends to be the extreme example that's given. What it means is there's an extra step there that has to happen, that the president has to be removed from office via the constitutional provisions before that president can be held accountable within the confines of the law. That's the way it works. it always comes back to this. The Constitution protects us from our own best intentions. It divides power among sovereigns, the various states, and the federal government, and among branches of government precisely so that we might resist the temptation to concentrate power in one branch as the expedient solution to the crisis of the day. It's from a 1992 Supreme Court case, New York versus United States. We disperse power and we balance it out among the branches and levels of government in order to make us a deliberative nation so that when we want to engage in policy decision making, whether long term and major, you know, like taking our economy in a whole different direction, or we want to go down the road and remove a president from office, we have to do so in a deliberative fashion. We have to think about it. And there are many steps that are involved. Anyway, when we return, we are going to hear about what the left has to say about this decision today. I want to get your thoughts. Facebook.com/AndrewLangerShow. That's how you can message me while I'm on the air. You can also at me on Twitter, also known as X, at Andrew_Langer, LANGER. I am Andrew Langer, in for Tony Katz. This is Tony Katz Today. Keith Olbermann tweets out, "The Supreme Court has betrayed democracy. Its members, including Jackson, Kagan, and Sotomayor, have proved themselves inept at reading comprehensive." Reading comprehension. I've proved myself inept at reading. Let's try this again. Let's do a take two there, Carl. All right. End scene. All right. "The Supreme Court has betrayed democracy. Its members, including Jackson, Kagan, and Sotomayor, have proved themselves inept at reading comprehension. And collectively, the court," in quotes, "has shown itself to be corrupt and illegitimate. It must be dissolved." Oh, my God. And then Damon Toll writes, if you're not following Damon, you should, tweets out, "So women of color have poor reading skills and can't compete with the brain power of a white man like you? Wow, Keith." Oh, my goodness. Yes, those are the reactions that you are hearing, the cries from the left as they are upset that how dare the Supreme Court rule 9-0 that Donald Trump stays on the ballot. Well, listen. Obviously, we could guess, we could surmise what MSNBC is saying today. Here is Dana Bash from CNN. Here's her meltdown on CNN right after the decision.
Look, unfortunately for America, the court isn't necessarily wrong that this is the way the framers wanted it to be. They wanted Congress, the people who are closest to their constituents, to be able to make the rules of the laws. That doesn't change the fact that because of gerrymandering in the House and all kinds of other issues, they're not doing their job on a lot of these big issues.
Yeah. I agree it's very unlikely, close to impossible that Congress will take action. But this is now a fair question that Manu Raju, Melanie Zanona should be asking members of Congress. Mm-hmm. Are you willing to pass legislation that would give us rules for how this works? It could only be in the future.
But which, by the way, that's what they want, right? They want what they've always wanted. The left, the Democrats, what they've wanted throughout this process is two things. A, they want to keep the Donald Trump, you know, the questions about Donald Trump, whether Donald Trump should be a candidate for president, alive, right? They want to, because again, remember, these elections are about moving small numbers of voters from column A to column B. I'm going to talk a little bit about polling numbers down the road, about issues, but the preference polling numbers don't matter, especially the aggregate ones. Oh, Donald Trump is up above 52%, blah, blah, blah. Strongest lead against Biden. It's meaningless, right? A, because part of the reason why they're reporting that is because they want folks to stay home come, you know, November of 2024. But the other part of it is that strategically, this is all about moving small. And when I say small, I mean out of the hundreds of millions of votes that are going to get cast this election, tens of millions, you know, almost 200 million votes that are going to get cast in this election in the fall. You know, the last election, it came down to about 50,000 votes across six states. So tens of thousands of votes here and there that you can move from column A to column B. And what they want to do is they want to raise the question about Donald Trump's legitimacy in the minds of people. The other part of it is that they want to perpetuate this myth that the Supreme Court is somehow illegitimate, because this will get them to take action on the Supreme Court should Donald Trump lose and the Democrats take control over both houses of Congress. When Keith Olbermann says that the Supreme Court ought to be dissolved, he's not speaking hyperbolically. That's what he wants. And how do we know that this is what the Democrats want? Because before this decision came out, you had two prominent Democrats who should know better, Dick Durbin in the Senate and Jamie Raskin in the House, on the TV news shows over the weekend talking about this. Here is Jamie Raskin, who, again, should know better because he apparently supposedly teaches constitutional law at American University. Congressman from Maryland, you all know I've done radio in Maryland in the D.C. air for many years, so I'm very familiar with the disingenuousness of Jamie Raskin. Here he is with Jen Psaki also. You know, when you think of Honest Broker, you don't think of Jen Psaki. Here is Jamie Raskin with Jen Psaki over the weekend.
These justices know what their powers are, right? They know the court schedule. They have the same calendar. Do you look at this court and think some of these justices may want to delay these trials?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think if you don't believe that, you're too innocent to be let out of the house by yourself at this point.
Sure, there are justices who want to delay these trials, but they're not the Republican justices. The reality is that it's the Democrats and the progressives, right? They want court cases and they want decisions on these things, but they know the more that they can drag this out, the more that these questions are not settled, the more questions they can raise in the minds of the average voter. I will say this much. I suspect that the immunity cases are going to be, I don't think they're going to be unanimous. They may be, but I suspect it's going to be a little bit more divided, the court on this. So there was Jamie Raskin proffering all of this. And then here comes Dick Durbin. Dick Durbin, the senator from Illinois. I like adding the S at the end. Dick Durbin, also not an honest broker. Here is what he had to say.
Senator, the Supreme Court said it will hear arguments in April over Donald Trump's claim that as a former president, he should be immune from prosecution. Do you agree with the court's decision to take this up, and how quickly should they rule?
Their delay in considering this critical issue, this timely issue, is going to delay the resolution of these cases by months at least, and perhaps beyond the election. I think that is a disappointment. I think the court has acted quickly in the past when they realized that the presidential timetable was at risk, and I'm really concerned with what they've done.
Or the court wants to deliberate about such things. I mean, that is the reality here. But isn't it interesting? I mean, Jamie Raskin was a little bit hard-nosed about this in the end, more hard-nosed about the conspiracy, but both of them are essentially talking about this conspiracy theory that the court is operating to somehow the benefit of Donald Trump overall, which, again, one would hope that this 9-0 decision would put to bed. By the way, you know, this issue, I want to just pull this up and make sure this is in here. Because I did a summary, but I want to make sure the summary is accurate. Unanimity. I know. You're hearing my computer in the background. Oh, I see. As I'm trying to spell words here. Unanimity. Justice Barrett, writing in her concurrence on all of this, writes, "For the present purposes, our differences are far less important than our unanimity. All 9 justices agree on the outcome of this case. That is the message Americans should take home." And indeed, that is the message that Americans should take home. That in an era in which we are all divided, in an era in which there are decisions that go to the heart of who we are as a people, go to the heart of the governance of our republic and our electoral system, that these 9 judges were able to come together, widely divergent viewpoints, these justices were able to come together and issue a unanimous decision in this case. When we return, we're going to be joined by Elaine Parker. She is with the Job Creators Network. As always, I want to hear from you. Facebook.com/AndrewLangerShow, @Andrew_Langer on Twitter. I am Andrew Langer. This is Tony Katz Today. Well, because there are other things going on in the world, we are obviously going to keep track of what's happening with the Supreme Court and Donald Trump. President Trump is supposed to speak in a little while. We will pull audio, though we've got to make sure that he does not use any profanity in his audio. But there are other issues going on as well. And joining me right now to talk about those issues is Elaine Parker. She is president of the Job Creators Network, one of my favorite organizations fighting for the rights of small business owners and entrepreneurs throughout the nation. Elaine, all kinds of things going on, obviously talking about the borders. And I want to start there. You guys have issued some very strong language regarding what's happening at the border. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so we put up a billboard in Times Square last week focusing on the idea, and we reposted the video of the police officers that were attacked by the Venezuelan migrants on the streets. And it basically, the billboard said, "Hey, Joe, if cops aren't safe because of your open borders, nobody is." And then we drove the public to a website called SecureOurBordersNow.com, where you can sign a petition calling on the Biden administration to act on our open borders, because it is a tremendous threat to our communities and obviously even to our police officers.
Yeah, we just had another story about a CVS being looted in Washington, D.C., the nation's capital itself, Elaine. Small business owners are obviously they are disproportionately hurt by such things. You know, you have big multi-state corporations. No, listen, not that we're condoning any attacks on outlets of multi-state, you know, corporations. But the point is, when small businesses are looted or robbed from in any manner, this hurts them. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. And President Biden actually spoke to the crime issue in a speech last week. And it really showed how out of touch he is with public safety concerns, because this elevated crime is hurting communities across the country. And we do a national small business poll. And for your listeners who don't know, we're a small business advocacy organization. Right. We actually don't talk about immigration. We've never weighed in on the immigration issue, but the economic spillover showed itself in our poll. And that's why I've been talking about it, is because 30% of our small business owners nationally said that the crime is actually costing them money and reducing their earnings, because they're having to hire more security to protect their employees. Wow. And customers, and because of the loss of product on their shelves. And so that impact has brought us into the fold to actually talk about this. It's just not something we ever talked about. But the reality is, securing our borders secures our communities.
Right. I could not agree more. And again, we're talking with Elaine Parker. She's president of the Job Creators Network. I want to talk about this because we just heard in our news break, gas prices up 25 cents here in Indiana. I certainly noticed it where I live. The gas prices are massively up. There is a new CBS News poll out that a majority of voters think that prices are going to continue to go up under Joe Biden. What are you guys hearing at JCN from your members, the constituency that you advocate for?
Well, costs in general, I mean, inflation is what is hurting our small business. It's been the number one issue that's hurting our businesses across the country for 2.5 years. And regardless of the fact that the Biden administration continues to try to spin it and tell the American people that costs are coming down, that gas is coming down, that inflation is coming down, the rate of inflation is still increasing and prices are still elevated as much as 20%. Gas is elevated much more than when the Trump administration was in office. And that's because President Trump made this country energy independent, and we were actually exporting oil under his administration. The day one, when President Biden came into office, he began a war on our domestic oil that has basically driven up the price of oil, and it's not going to come down unless we start drilling. It's very simple. We have to start drilling again. It is a national security issue. It's an economic issue, and it's hurting everyday ordinary Americans to have all this elevated pricing.
Yeah, we did a panel at CPAC the weekend before last with Steve Moore and Doug Collins and Brendan Carr, and Steve and I got into a discussion about this issue of it's the economic issues here at home. It's, you know, if you want to stop the war between Russia and Ukraine and bottom out the Russian economy, you have to do that by massively increasing our domestic oil production and our refining capacity. And the same thing with regards to Hamas, right? If you deny Iran their you know, oil money on the open market, or the other folks in the Middle East who are funding terrorism, becoming energy dominant, not just independent, but energy dominant, is the way to go about doing it. Let me go here, because we're talking about the Supreme Court. We're talking about the Supreme Court's ruling. I'm not going to ask you to talk about the ruling today, Elaine. What I am going to ask you about is the Biden administration doing an end run around the Supreme Court by still trying to pay off student loans. What are you hearing from your members about this? Why is this such a bad deal for the American taxpayer generally?
Well, the Biden administration continues to defy the Supreme Court by forgiving these student loans. And it sets a dangerous, dangerous precedent going forward that if you're an administration and you don't like what the Supreme Court says, just find a workaround and just keep doing it. At this point, the Biden administration has forgiven $138 billion with a B, dollars. For almost 4 million borrowers without a single act of Congress.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's horrible. And so we need to have our voices heard. We need to hold the administration accountable in November. I mean, the reality is this does nothing to solve the problem of student tuition that is out of control.
Right. It's interesting because I know you guys aren't dealing with the prescription drug issues, or maybe you are, I don't know. But I've had conversations in the last week about the Biden administration wanting to essentially take the intellectual property rights of anybody doing scientific research if they've received a little bit of federal funding, and how this is going to devastate universities all around the country. I mean, it's just crazy. Anyway, Elaine, how do folks find out more about the good work you guys are doing at the Job Creators Network?
They can go to jobcreatorsnetwork.com and subscribe to our newsletter.
Go and check it out. Jobcreatorsnetwork.com is the place to go. Elaine Parker, thank you so very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
That there we go. That was Elaine Parker from the Job Creators Network. And there are a couple of different points she raised, and I want to get into these. We got a CBS News poll over the weekend. And again, I'll talk more about this. This is not, and we should not take this as an indication as to what's going to happen in the election. But I want to talk about this in terms of the American mindset and how the Democrats are spinning the American mindset. Would love to hear from you all on this. What do you think about what's going on? Is the economy getting better? Why don't you send me a message on Facebook, facebook.com/AndrewLangerShow, or at me on Twitter, @Andrew_Langer on Twitter. I am Andrew Langer, in for Tony Katz. This is Tony Katz Today. Oh, my God. So far, the hot takes keep rolling in. Oh, man. You know, guys, this is part of the problem in America. As I've long said, one of the problems with our political discourse is everybody wants the hottest of the hot takes. This is from an AP reporter. Now, remember when the AP as a wire service was not known for its editorializing, right? I mean, you get always you get a certain degree of editorializing from the Washington Post, from the New York Times, etc. The AP, United Press International, etc. They would just give you the straight news. Listen to this tweet from Seung-min Kim, who's a reporter for the AP. Supreme Court restores Trump to ballot, rejecting state attempts to hold him accountable for attack on Capitol in 2021. I mean, it really is. There are folks who are just through the looking glass. Boy, I almost dropped a few F-bombs there. I mean, it really is insane how through the looking glass some of these folks are. Now, listen, I wanted to talk about this. We got a lot going on today. I mean, oh, my goodness. So much going on. I wanted to talk about these polling numbers. Because before we got the Supreme Court case, this was something I was talking about. Now, in case you're just joining us, let me preface this by saying this is not about presidential preference. Who are you going to vote for? Because I think those polls are largely meaningless, especially the polls that show Donald Trump leading. And I say that not because I don't want Donald Trump to win necessarily, but because A, they are meaningless. B, you know, there some of this is going to be done in an attempt to, you know, think that voters don't have to go out and vote, you know, like to encourage voter apathy. On the other hand, how the voters feel about particular issues is important here. So a CBS News poll came out over the weekend. We were just talking with Elaine Parker from the Job Creators Network about prices. Here is what the CBS News poll had to say.
Push that forward and ask, well, whose policies might make prices go down? And there's a lot of Republicans who think that prices will go down if Donald Trump gets elected. But what's troubling for Joe Biden is that you still get him associated with price increases, because a lot of people think that prices would continue to go up under his policies.
Right. More than half of Americans think that prices are going to continue to rise. And this is certainly true when it comes to things like essentials, like gas. Right. And I've been saying this. If you don't know, I may have mentioned, if you're just joining, by the way, I'm Andrew Langer. I'm in for Tony Katz. I do policy work. I run something called the Center for Regulatory Freedom over at CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Coalition. And we filed comments on this, and I ran the numbers. You know, here's what happens in terms of gas prices if Joe Biden continues as president and they continue these policies of discouraging drilling. And also refining, by the way. Refining is a huge part of this. But we're looking at gas prices continuing to shoot up. That just goes without saying. Or it should go without saying. Now, it's funny because that's the reality of it. I wasn't aware that my old friend Michael Steele, and he is my old friend, I haven't spoken to him in a number of years now, but he was a good friend of mine for many, many years. Michael Steele, I wasn't aware that he has a show on MSNBC. Maybe he was filling in. Eric Swalwell joined him, which I literally been shaking my head about that. Eric Swalwell doesn't think that it's actually a problem with the numbers, the prices themselves. He just thinks it's the perception and it's messaging. Here's what Eric Swalwell had to say.
What is wrong here? What is the disconnect that people think that Joe Biden is presiding over the worst economy in a decade?
Our economy is a comeback. Our economy is a comeback story. We've got to start telling that story, Michael. And Democrats, I think when it comes to messaging, we're at our worst when we try and, you know, speak to the head and we try and get all cerebral and we talk about the numbers and, you know, unemployment numbers and GDP growth. That doesn't mean anything.
It's all about, we're appealing to their heads, and they're just too stupid to figure it out, Michael. You know, I'm here, you and me, we're the elites on MSNBC. Yeah, these Americans, they're just too dumb. We got to go to the heart. Oh, wait a minute. When you go to the heart, it's really clear that, you know, folks get that shock every time they drive by the gas pump, and gas prices have jumped up 25 cents in a week. In a week. Yeah, it's funny. I went and filled up my car yesterday before I came on the air. And I just shook my head at the price of the pump because I'm like, you know, I went to one. It's not the normal place that I go. I have a, you know, we all do. We all have a couple places that we know we're going to get gas. It's just a couple of cents less per gallon. And I went to this one place and I just shook my head. I'm like, well, I might as well just do it here because it's not going to help either way. And then I watched as the price of the pump crept up above $50 for my tank. It's real money. It's real money, folks. Anyway, it's not just about the economy. This may be my favorite question in the poll. Let's play cut number six here about migration.
We know that immigration is a key issue for voters across the country, and according to our polling, by more than 5-1, voters believe President Biden's policies will lead more migrants to try crossing the border compared with President Trump's policies. Only 22% think your policies will decrease migrant crossings.
Well, no guff there, Chet. Oh, my God. I mean, I'm just sort of sitting here going, you know, do you need to ask the question? Who's going to let in more people to the country? Is it going to be Donald Trump or is it going to be Joe Biden? Yeah, no guff. Obviously. I mean, that's like saying, who's gonna stumble when they fall off Air Force One? Donald Trump or Joe Biden? Well, you know something? It probably is going to be about 1 in 6 who say that it's going to be Donald Trump who think is going to stumble more. Who's gonna go out and eat ice cream instead of doing his job? 6-1, 5-1, Joe Biden. Yes, Joe Biden's policies, they lead to more migration into the United States. That's the way it works. When you rescind more than 90 policies designed to secure the border, and you don't allow, you go after states that are trying to enforce the border law, it's going to have the impact of increasing more people. And by the way, folks are going to notice. This is the thing that you're going to come back to with the Eric Swalwell situation. Folks are going to notice. Now, they may not be like me. Real quick, in the last minute we have in this hour, I do all the grocery shopping in my house. I enjoy it. I also do most of the cooking. So therefore, that's why I do the shopping, because I know exactly what I'm going to make and I know what I need to buy, etc. So I made last night, I made red beans and rice, Cajun style red beans and rice with andouille sausage. And I noticed that the packages of sausage were getting smaller. You know, it's not like Hebrew National Franks where they took a franc or two out over the years and you're now at, what is it, 6 francs in a package of Hebrew Nationals? But instead of being a 16-ounce package of sausage or even a 14-ounce package of sausage, 13 and a half ounces, 13 ounces, in some case even just 12 ounces in that package. This is real. It's not Donald Trump's fault. This is all due to Joe Biden. The next hour, we got Tony Katz, C.C. O'Leary from the Southeastern Legal Foundation, and former CIA case officer Pedro Horta all joining us. I am Andrew Langer. And of course, ladies and gentlemen, this is Tony Katz Today.